it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Goodman, and you're listening to the fantastic Cut to the Race podcast.
Hello, my name is Brian Mylander, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Rosanna Tennant, and you are listening to the incredible Cut to the Race podcast.
Hi, I'm Jordan King, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Crofty. You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out, and away we go!
Hello and welcome to the Cut to the Race podcast. I am your host for this week, James. There is no Ollie, but I do have my faithful news crew with me, Sam and Abby. Sam, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, James. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm all right. It is very hot here in South France. It's 39 degrees. I am suffering a bit, but
yeah.
I mean, the company makes it worth it.
It's hot here as well, but I feel like it being significantly hotter in France kind of nullifies my right to complain. I have to let you have that one.
Thanks. How about you, Abby? How's it going? Are you a reasonable temperature?
I'm very well, thank you. And yeah, like Sam said, whilst it is hot in the UK, I don't think we can complain as much as you can with the heat in France.
Well, we were talking before the show actually about Sam is determined that Abby mentioned Cheltenham's weather in comparison with Monaco earlier in the season. I can't somewhere. Quite remember that.
It was
Do let us know, info at Formula Nerds, if you remember.
Yeah, it was, I can't remember exactly, but it was something along the lines of Abby used the weather in Cheltenham as a barometer for what the weather elsewhere should have been. I feel like I'm doing you a disservice here, Abby. It was both more intelligent and funnier than I'm portraying right now.
I'm not sure it was that intelligent.
I suggest we move on from this one.
Yes, let's move on to the...
If you're not intelligent, then what hope have me and James got?
Well, I mean, this show will primarily be about a quiz. As ever, Abby will be quiz master, so it will only be us competing against each other or working together. I like to think. So we'll get a measure of our intelligence, at least on all things F1, in a little bit. But we're going to do a bit more of just a general mid-season review. We'll talk about... We're not going to touch on our predictions from before the season. We're just going to use some of those topics to have a bit of a chat about how we think the first half of the season has gone. So let's kick off with that and... Well, let's begin with the rookies. Now, we debated which rookie was going to be the best before the season got going. So far, I mean, we'll talk about which rookie's been the worst. I think that will be a shorter conversation. In fact, this might be a short conversation as well, but I'll throw to you, Abby, first. Who do you think has had the best time of the rookies in the first half of the season?
It's got to be Piastri. Obviously, he is the rookie that is higher up in the standings. He has got a podium whilst it wasn't a sprint race. He still managed to get a podium, a front row start in Spa as well. And he's been able to hold his own against Lando, which if you look at Logan, Alex is the one scoring points. Logan so far has 0 points. And whilst he is performing well, better than what I thought he would. He still has a long way to go, whereas I feel Piastri has settled into the car, settled into F1 a lot quicker and a lot better than Logan has. So Piastri is the best one for me.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be debated much. I think we can also infer from that that you think Nyck de Vries was the worst, and let's just combine them because, let's be honest, it's a pretty clear 1-2-3, I think, as things have gone. Sam, if you feel different, feel free to jump in now and come up with a hot take.
I don't feel different. I think Abby has well covered the Piastri Sargeant side of things. And I think actually the caveat and the nuance that Sargeant has not been as bad as people have said at points. He's had a solid and steady start to his F1 career. Williams is exactly the right environment for him. They're going to give him time. They're going to give him the opportunity to raise his level of performance to that of Alex Albon, who is a very quick driver. And I think we're now past that point of going, oh, is Alex Albon F1 material? Is he good enough? He absolutely is. And he's probably one of the naturally more gifted drivers on the grid as well. But that also kind of that using that benchmark brings us nicely onto Nyck de Vries, because much like I've said with Nicholas Latifi in the past, I think we should stop acting like Nyck de Vries is historically bad. He's not. Nor was Nicholas Latifi. They were just, wrong place at the wrong time in certain degrees, both very difficult cars and environments to be in at the time. And also, you know, Yuki Tsunoda maybe is a more favourable yardstick to be up against than George Russell. But Yuki Tsunoda's taken a step forward this year and he's looked very, very good. And Nyck de Vries also has the combined element of he's come in as a former Formula E champion as well, which is, of course, an FIA level championship, as a world championship. So he has a lot to go on there. And at 28, you've got to come in and hit the ground running. And he just couldn't be at the level that AlphaTauri and Red Bull were expecting, which is very, very difficult. And there are some comparisons between those two in that they were both 24-ish when they had their final season in F2. So again, that very much cuts against Oscar Piastri, who was a back-to-back F3, F2 champion, which is seen as the way to do things. I think history will remember Nyck de Vries more unfavorably than I think is accurate.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. He was never miles off. He was just consistently a couple of tenths off. He is the worst, undeniably, of the three rookies. And obviously, Oscar, whilst having a slow start, has really started to show what he can do recently. So absolutely no disagreement here on any of those. I think Nyck probably could have come good given time. He's generally shown that it takes him a bit of time to adapt to each series, but he was never going to have that time with Daniel Ricciardo waiting in the wings, clearly, with the Red Bull family looking to try and get him back in to use him as a benchmark. So that's that, really. I think that one is easy enough. So let's move beyond the rookies and on to the rest of the grid, best and worst. Now, I'll go back to you, Abby, again. Best, is it as obvious as it might seem, or do you think if we look beyond the total domination at the front, we find a better driver?
I think, well, obviously, Red Bull, Max Verstappen, they are in a league of their own. You do have the top teams with Mercedes and Ferrari. Aston, Alonso has outperformed that car, as we've all seen with the podiums, which I don't think anybody expected Aston to have quite as good a start to the season as they did have. For me, if you take away Max, dominant driver, and take away the rookies, still getting used to F1, for me, it's Hülkenberg and Albon, because Albon has done amazingly this season, I think. He has managed to score 11 points, which is the total of what the whole team of Williams has. And yes, he hasn't been in the top five every weekend, but I feel like he has been consistent and he has shown what he can do and impressed. And the same with Hülkenberg. You put him in the car next to Magnussen and he's had 3 years out of F1. This is his first full-time season in 3 years. And he has done amazingly. He's been in the points. He's qualified a lot higher than Magnussen. He's qualified in the top five in a couple of races. And I feel like at the moment, if you look at the two Haas drivers, Hülkenberg is the stronger one, which I didn't think would happen before the season started. So Albon and Hulk are the ones that have impressed me so far.
We'll come back to Hulk maybe in the next award. I want to say award we're giving out. It's not an award show. But before we do come back to Hulk, Sam, do you agree? Do you disagree with Abby following on from our news and views?
I think they're both very, very good candidates. I think you can't really argue against them. I think there's probably a little cohort that you could draw upon when you're talking about the best performers across the season. I mean, yeah, take Albon, for example. Abby, you mentioned the 11 points. That's three more than the whole team achieved throughout the whole of last season. So Williams and Albon have both, in unison, taken a step forward. And that's been evident in the first, 12 rounds. For me, I can't get past Fernando Alonso. He looked mighty impressive last season at points. Was unlucky over the course of things. I think he finished behind Ocon in the point standings because of that poor luck that he had. But he's just further elevated his game this year. And for someone to be doing that at 41, now 42, he's really cutting against that kind of conventional wisdom that you have a peak as an athlete and as a racing driver, and that, you know, as you get towards 40, you can't compete at the top level. And that just isn't the case anymore. You know, evolution in sports science and the way that drivers are able to look after their body, their minds, all sorts of things like that is very much, you know, proof in Fernando Alonso, how he's managed to keep himself at that high level. I honestly think that he is in a class of three with Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen at the moment. I think they're the only guys that could go up against one another and give each other an equal fight. I don't think Leclerc's quite in that category yet, but I think those three are by far the most dominant drivers on the grid.
I think Charles could potentially, I think he could go up against someone on Saturday. He just needs to get that consistency that those three have and have very much shown this year. And Lando is certainly knocking on the door as well. It's got to be said. And that would be my, I think, it's so hard to pick a driver of the first half of the year when you've got one who is as good as Max Verstappen in as good a car as the RB19, because he is in, you know, it's the whole thing of he's in Formula 1 and everyone else is Formula 1.25. So yeah, he is undeniably the driver of Formula 1. If you go into 1.25, yeah, I would say it's Fernando, Lewis, Lando and Alex all with a good shout. And I will sit on the fence there because, I don't know, if I had to pick one, I would say Fernando, I think. But I mean, I've almost kind of picked from a hat there. I didn't come to a decision in my mind. I just felt like I had to say something. He had such a great start to the season. It was very feel good seeing him finally make a good career move. Whether you like him or not, I think everyone wanted to see him back on the podium consistently. And he had that. We'll have to see how the Aston updates go from here. Now, one of our other predictions was who will win the Drivers and Constructors Championship. I'm going to nip that one in the bud. Let's not even talk about it. Let's not waste us or the listeners' time. So let's do one other I think is worth having a chat about, which would be the shock of the year. That's kind of open to interpretation. Obviously, I was mentioning Hulk. I would say the surprise. Let's talk about the driver who is a surprise, the team who are a surprise, and maybe an event. Chuck them
all
in.
Why not? Are we not going to first talk about the driver we think has underperformed as the opposite
of
the...
I'm just so focused on the positives. I forgot that we're doing the good and
relentlessly
bad.
Positive.
I know.
Like one of those like really kind of positive infomercials you get. Like the life-affirming ones.
So crack on.
I might be putting the cat amongst the pigeons with this one, but I'm going to say that I've been kind of low-key disappointed with George Russell this season.
Mm.
I don't think he's quite hit the heights that we'd expect. And I think that this is partly when cast against the background of we expect him to be able to go toe-to-toe with Lewis. We know that he is capable of that. This is the thing. And what's made me think of this is talking about that kind of 1.25 cohort or F1.25. Because he's absolutely up there with the Norrises and the Leclercs. And I'd say probably further ahead than Albon, really, on outright pace. But he hasn't been able to get it together in qualifying. And that is an issue for someone who was kind of known for his...
Mr. Saturday. Yeah.
Exactly. And there's been little mistakes and there's been these weekends that they just haven't come together for him. And the team have then kind of been like, no, that's on us. That's, you know, kind of wasn't George's fault. And there's been a couple of instances, yeah, when you kind of go, well, how has he got himself into that situation?
Yeah. I think you can see him having to push more now. I think that's it. Last year, for whatever reason, he was... Well, this is the thing. If this were George's first year up against Lewis in Mercedes, I think we'd go, he's doing a solid job. He's a couple of tenths off a lot of the time. He's finishing kind of one or two places behind him. Not bad against a seven-time world champion, but because he did outscore him, at least statistically, last year, I think that's it. We now feel like he's underperforming, when actually maybe this is just the level, and that's up for debate whether... How much did 2021 affect Lewis? How much of it was him running the supposed guinea pig setups in the first half of the year? He did also get a huge amount of bad luck last year, and George benefited from a lot of safety cars. That's switched around a bit. Lewis has had a couple of lucky breaks. George has been unlucky once or twice, and you can see the big swing there. Abby, what do you think on George, and if you think someone else has been worse than him?
Well, I think he was actually my prediction as to who would win the championship at the beginning of the season. So let's just brush over that.
Gloss right over that.
That is a real George Russell driver of the day, isn't it?
I know. he's been doing okay. He hasn't done as well as I thought he would, obviously, given what we just said. But no, I agree. If it was his first season in the Mercedes, you'd be like, oh, okay, this is like a good, solid performance from him. But it hasn't been, and he's had a couple of DNFs, finishing outside the points. It's not the year that he would have wanted. I feel like Lewis has definitely become more comfortable with the car this year, even though...
That's the other thing. The zero pods.
Yeah.
Was that a real...
Yeah. There are a lot of things in play, and obviously Lewis has more experience than George, but Lewis seems more comfortable with the team, with the car, given his time there. And Russell, I don't know, he hasn't been as consistent. He hasn't been as on his game as he has been in the past. And it is disappointing to see, but... At the end of the day, his teammate's Lewis Hamilton, and it is a difficult car to drive this year.
Like, and I've just looked up at the championship standings to just kind of refresh myself a bit, and this is kind of a duality of the situation, and I appreciate the inherent contradiction in this. I saw that George Russell was sixth in the driver's standings, and he is the filling of a Ferrari sandwich. Oh no, sorry, he is a George Russell sandwich. People always get that. That's something that everyone always gets incorrect, don't they? They refer to the bread as the sandwich, but it's actually the filling. So George Russell is the sandwich. The Ferraris are making a George Russell sandwich. And
they're the bread. That would have been the very short way of saying what you just said.
Yes, it would have. But I'm excuse the pun, filling. I saw that in P7 is Carlos Sainz Jr., who I think has also had a kind of fairly underwhelming season, 92 points, seven shy of George Russell. And I thought, see, that's not good. But then I saw that he's equal on points with Charles Leclerc, who's in P5. And I thought, oh, okay. And there's only 7 points between Leclerc and Sainz, which surprises me.
Charles really struggled at the start of the year, didn't he? Had a couple of retirements.
Two retirements, and a seventh.
Pacing from there on.
But looking at George Russell's roles, you know, you've got one podium, a couple of fourth place finishes, but a lot of sixth and seventh and eighth, a couple of retirements in there. But Hamilton has consistently been, I mean, Hamilton hasn't retired yet from a race, but he's had two P2s, two he's P3s.
Been, yeah, two, second, third or fourth pretty much without fail. Like,
yeah.
So I think we, before we go off on too much of a tangent though, Abby, are you, is this your choice then? Are you following Sam in saying George Russell has been, I mean, are we saying he's the worst driver of the year? Like, no, that is the, that's what's up for debate here.
I don't like the phrase worst driver.
That was, I think, was in our underperformer.
Yeah, yes, underperformed better.
Yes, it's a more journalistic way of saying it.
Underperformed the most. I think Lance Stroll has, underperforming, that's where it changes, isn't it? Because it's their ceiling, it's their relative ceilings. You have to say George Russell's is higher, who is, I mean, Lance up against Fernando coming into a new team should, how much of it is his wrists still playing a part, maybe?
Well, exactly.
I don't know. But he should be closer. He was closer to Seb.
Yeah, but I think maybe this is putting a hot take out there. I think Fernando's quicker
than Seb. I think so too.
I think he's a more difficult
just number. Yeah, I think if Seb and Fernando had been teammates throughout their careers, I think.
Oh, could you imagine what a Fernando lineup?
I mean, they'd probably have both killed each other, or I don't know. But they I think Fernando would have more wins and more championships.
He has more tenacity to me, Fernando. He still has that drive and like desire to win, whereas Seb, I feel like, was just, I like the sport, I like racing. It doesn't matter if I win anymore or not.
Yeah, I'm here for a good time and to look after the young ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And pick up rubbish. I'm all out of rubbish. But so, are those our choices? Is there anyone else? I mean, we've obviously gone through the rookies already. Nyck de Vries kind of goes without saying in terms of underperforming, if we're not saying worst. I don't know if there are any other clear shouts. The Alfa Romeo has been underwhelming as a team. Alfa Tauri as well.
Kevin Magnussen hasn't quite been what I would have hoped. But again, how much is that is because of how surprising Nico Hülkenberg's return
has been. He's been getting absolutely killed in qualifying, but when it comes to race day, admittedly, you can't do much with that Haas, but they are actually, I think, 6-6 on race day. But we could talk about this forever. Let's quickly move on and do the final one that I tried to intro way too early.
Sorry.
Shock of the year. No, don't be sorry for reminding me that I totally missed something we were supposed to talk about.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Biggest shock of the year. Let's keep it simple. Let's get onto the quiz. You know, it's the best bit anyway. But so a quick discussion. Biggest shock of the year. Take that how you want. What has been the biggest shock of the year for you, Abby?
Worst shock, Alpine as a team as a whole. The best shock, Alonso.
Okay. Concise. I like it, Sam.
I mean, yeah, you make a very good point with Alpine being just what on earth is going on there. I mean, maybe this is really, really obvious, but AlphaTauri firing Nyck de Vries 10 races in. That's got to be up there, right?
Yeah, not even waiting till the summer break.
No.
And the fact that Danny Ric is willing to go to AlphaTauri to some extent, like both of those are, I think people were like, oh, if he underperforms, maybe Red Bull swing the axe again. You know, it's not unheard of for them. But I think people probably would have expected Liam Lawson or maybe OS to be put in. I think people were like, you know, Danny Ric's going to wait and try and get a better seat.
I think the thing is that I think the F2 drivers, from my experience, from having similar conversations with them in the past, is very much like, I'm in an F2 title fight. I want to see that through. And obviously, if AlphaTauri come calling, you don't say no. But I think Liam Lawson's in a similar situation with Super Formula. And I think that cuts both ways. I think AlphaTauri look at that and go, we don't want to take those guys out of that situation, because how much experience do you gain from being in a title fight? From having to operate and perform when the pressure is at its highest, when the stakes are at their highest, I think you learn and you get so much from that. Mm. I think why the situation is different for Daniel Ricciardo 10 races into this season than it was before the season started, when he didn't want to take the Haas seat. He didn't want a seat that he didn't feel was maybe kind of equal to his talents, let's just say, without putting words in his mouth. But he obviously didn't want a drive that he felt was beneath him. Maybe that sounds more harsh than it is, but that's kind of how it is. Is we know how Yuki Tsunoda is performing. Imagine if Daniel Ricciardo stepped into that car and we still had the view of Yuki Tsunoda that we've had for the first couple of seasons. Everyone would be like, oh, Daniel Ricciardo is underperforming a bit. But no, we can now see that Yuki Tsunoda has taken a step forward. We also know where the AlphaTauri is. And we also have the background of Sergio Perez having some really, really difficult moments in the Red Bull.
I was about to say, I mean, that's surely why. Yeah, that's why he's actually gone for it. I think I was going to ask, and I thought we don't have time to open another can of worms. But I wonder if, so I'll just hypothesize, if Checo were having a better season, if Daniel would have bothered almost with the AlphaTauri seat. I mean, I don't know. I think he probably would have, but it's certainly, like you say, it will have incentivized him to go, you know, there's a clear path back to what is undeniably the class of the field. If I can impress sufficiently in the next 10 races. And if he'd been at Haas, I mean, if he had absolutely nailed it, maybe he could have pushed for a Ferrari seat, some ties there, but it's not really the same thing, is it? So I think that does make sense.
And I think if you look at some of the most successful drivers in F1 history, it's not always talent that brings that success. Sometimes it's circumstance, and it's knowing when to move away. It's that having the instincts of basically a shark to know where you need to go to be successful. Lewis Hamilton, prime example. Would he be a seven-time world champion if he stayed at McLaren? Absolutely not. And we wouldn't even come close to having, is he the greatest full-time conversations? It is circumstance that has allowed for that to happen to a large degree. And I think Daniel Ricciardo, rightly, has smelt blood in the water and he's gone for it.
Yeah. So I would agree with Sam. I think that is my shock of the season so far too. I see what you're saying, Abby, about Alpine, but I am not surprised by Alpine floundering at this point. It is kind of a given. It's kind of their MO, to be honest. And I say that as someone who lives in their country. And again, sorry. To any French listeners. But I think that's it. I think that will do for the first half of the season. We'll hope for the second half of the season to be, we'll get some more shocks up there and maybe a little bit more debatable for, you know, the driver of the second half of the season. As much as we did debate it, yeah, let's hope for some different winners at least. Shouts there, or the awards at the end of the year is going to be.
I was going to say, I'm looking forward to the end of the season when we go, well, what was the biggest shock of the second half of the season? You go, oh well, someone other than the Red Bull won a race.
Yeah, pretty much. Like,
oh, big shock. Mental, isn't it?
I will now throw immediately to Abby because it is quiz time.
So yes, I have created a summer break quiz reflecting on the first half of the season. It is 10 questions. I'm assuming you guys will be able to ace all the questions and know all the answers. So
it's a lot of faith and a high bar.
Well, given your F1 knowledge, you will probably be able to do these quite easily. So, question one. We're 13 rounds into the season. Albeit Imola being cancelled. There are 10 rounds left. Can you name the remaining races to the end of the season and a bonus point if you get them in the correct order?
So we are working together.
Dutch Grand Prix. Yeah, we clearly are. It would be very hard to compete, to be honest, just shouting. It wouldn't Dutch, be great Italian. Podcast material. Yeah, well, there you go. So we've got Dutch and Italian. Is it Singapore after that?
Singapore, Japan.
Yep.
Yeah.
So then we've got... Is it Qatar?
Yes.
Yeah. And then Austin. Yes. Then Mexico.
Yeah.
Abby's really helped us out through that dodgy middle section that we could have debated it, and she's just nodded at us. Thank you.
I'm like, and she's like, yeah. And I'm like, cool. And then,
so then Brazil, Las Vegas, Abu Dhabi.
Yes. See? Easy.
No. Sacre bleu.
Of the remaining circuits to go, who is hosting a sprint race?
Right. So there are six.
You get a bonus point if you can name the sprint races that have already happened.
Already happened.
That's a bonus point.
We had Baku, we had Austria.
Yeah.
And we had the Belgian Grand Prix.
Belgium.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we've also
Brazil got, again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, standard.
I mean, it's a shoe-in, right, at this stage.
Yeah. Are they doing one for Qatar?
Yes.
Yes. And was it? Is it? It's not. I'm thinking of Austin because I'm thinking Austin because it is the... No, it is Austin because it's also the F1 Academy season finale.
Yes.
And also, there's rumours that... was it that someone is putting Haas, who is going in... There's a rumour that Ollie Bearman will take FP1 in Austin, which... I'm not sure I'm buying because why would you put a F2 driver in one of your cars when it is the only practice session of the weekend?
Yeah.
So either Kevin Magnussen or Nico Hülkenberg is going to go into qualifying completely fresh. It'll be the first time they got in the car all weekend.
Yeah, with an 18-year-old's advice.
Yeah.
Ollie Bearman.
I mean, he's a fantastic driver, but is he as well-equipped to set up a car or a specific car that Kevin Magnussen and Nico Hülkenberg have been before. Driving all season?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I can't see it happening. But yeah, anyway. So Austin is the other one.
It's our final answer, finally.
Correct. Question three. Which driver finished 17th five times in the first eight races, including the sprint in Baku, and in the last six races has never finished outside the top 10, scoring 57 points in the process?
Oh, is that going to be Oscar? Could it be... Or who's... Right, well, it can't be De Vries. I mean, obviously, I thought that before Abby said the top 10 thing, because she said, yeah, the final six. But obviously it can't. Who's got points in every single...
points.
If it's... 17th is very low to then be points every time.
It's not the Alpines because they keep on retiring.
I can't see anyone who could be but Oscar or Lando.
It's got to be Lando.
Abby has given it away. Thanks with your eyebrows raising.
Lando
was 17th. Wow.
Yeah.
I guess, Saudi was a mess and Bahrain was a mess.
Were they messing around with tyres at the Baku sprint race as well? They started on with softs.
Oh, yeah.
And they couldn't make it through. So they had to pit. Nice one. Sorry, I mean...
Let's speed this up. They are far better at this quiz in under half an hour.
Question four. How many drivers have stepped on the podium this season so far?
Esteban Ocon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one. That's our answer. So Esteban, Fernando, Lando, and then the big six, if you will. Is there anyone else that we're missing? Oh, yes, there
is. If we're saying podium, are we also counting sprint races?
I was going to say.
Yes.
Oh, Oscar we Piastri. Are then. And Pierre Gasly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yes.
However many drivers that is, 11, 10?
Yes.
They didn't get on the podium though, did they? They got on a weird little podium on the ground.
Technicalities.
I mean, Oscar Piastri's not counting as a podium, to be fair.
Exactly.
Question five. One driver has finished in 12 different positions so far, including in the sprint races. Who is
Mr.
it?
Mr. Versatile. not that you're aiming for that. That's not...
12 different positions in... Okay, so in 15 races, including the sprints. That is quite a spread.
Is it Sergio Perez? No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Yeah.
Okay, right. Let's, Sam, give one answer each. And see if we get it. Just let's not debate it. Let's just go gut, because we could debate this one for
eight. Go gut. Let's go gut. I love that. Oh, God. Let's go gut.
I'm happy to go. Stop trying to make gut happen. second Mean Girls reference on this podcast. So
what was the first?
It was an intro. I'm not going to get into it. right. I'm going to say Lance Stroll.
And Sam, who's yours?
I'm going to say Alex Albon.
No. You're correct.
Oh, no. There goes our 10 out of 10.
It is.
Who is it?
Gasly. He's finished 3rd, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, 18th, and 20th.
Nice. Wow. Impressive.
Question 6. One race had 8 drivers fail to finish. Where was this race?
Oh, that was the one with loads of retirements.
Yes, 8 in fact.
What an insight. I'm so glad you're here.
It was the Australian Grand Prix.
Bonus point if you can name the drivers who didn't finish.
Oh, Gasly, Ocon. Finish.
Now I can see why Abby was like, no, it'll take...
Right, Charles Leclerc. Sergeant and De Vries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no. Ooh, did one of them actually technically finish?
Limp home. Okay. So that's 5. Joe? George Russell?
Yes.
Yep. But not Joe. Okay. Bottas? I don't know. I can't
Albon
remember the other two.
And Magnussen. Excluding the sprint races, how many retirements have there been during the Grand Prix this season?
Oh. How? Well, there was 8 in Australia.
I would say from there, like, I'm not going to bother trying to, like,
just
let's just take an
number.
Educated guess. Like, probably 3 on average for the rest of them, which is another 11. So 41, I'm saying.
Sam?
Eyebrow 42. Raise. I think that means it's close.
27.
Okay, no, it does not. 27. That is slow.
Almost a third of them came in Australia.
Yeah, it's crazy.
How's that for maths?
Okay, now the two next questions follow a certain scenario. This scenario is if you remove the Red Bulls from the final points classification, remove them from the championships.
We'd have a fantastic season. Sorry.
And then you move every other driver up in the standings. Right. Who would be the top 6 in the championship right now?
So Alonso Lewis, I think, are the top 2.
Yeah.
I saw this a while back. And then it gets really tricky.
Charles
was in 3rd.
Charles, yep.
Oh, no, sorry. You take both the Red Bulls out.
Take both Red Bulls out, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. Charles was 3rd.
Barely a Red Bull.
And then I really can't remember. So we say George Carlos Lando.
Yes, that's correct. Well done.
Nailed it. Bonus point. No, don't give me a bonus point.
Question 9. Who currently has 0 points, but would be on 3 points following that scenario if the Red Bulls were excluded?
Nick De Vries.
No.
Logan Sargeant.
Yes.
Yeah, he got 11th and 12th, didn't he?
Yes. And then final question follows a different scenario. So if the points for both sprints and the Grand Prix were awarded with 20 points for 1st, 19 for 2nd, and so on, so 1 point for 20th.
Oh, like IndyCar style.
Who would be the top 6 in the championship with a new point system?
Ooh. I think Max might still be top.
Yes.
I'm going to go ahead and say that.
Really?
Does Checo hang on to 2nd?
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Just about.
Yeah.
Then Fernando Lewis, which way round's that going to be?
I reckon Lewis, Fernando.
I'd say Lewis 3rd.
Correct.
More consistently, yeah. And then who completes the top six then? Which order are Charles, George and Carlos in? Who misses out? Charles has had more, like we said, has had
George, a few more stinkers, George, has been, so George has been more consistent. So I'd say George.
George, then Carlos.
No, George, say Charles, Carlos, then Carlos. George.
Carlos, oh. then George.
Yeah.
So it would be...
Wait, so George's...
It would be Verstappen first, Perez basically, second, Hamilton...
I know that again.
Russell. Yeah.
And you really did your best to derail me.
But it would mean that second place would only... It would be a more interesting battle because there would be 3 points between second and third with that point system rather than however many.
Wait, so it would be Verstappen, Perez, Hamilton, Alonso, and then this is where I got lost because I thought George would be then next.
Then Carlos, then George, then Charles.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Okay. Oh, Carlos, eh? That's unlucky.
Well, he only retired once, didn't he? So...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot that George retired a couple of times.
Well, there you go. I have no idea how many points... You know, with all the bonus points on offer, I think we might have got 10 out of 10. I can't believe you thought we were going to get every question right and know exactly how many retirements there had been over 12 rounds, including the sprints, I think.
You're not that nerdy.
You only got two wrong. So I think you got, like, 12, if I've counted it right. So
12 out of 10.
Well. Nice. With two wrong.
Yeah.
Impressive.
That's a real Abby quiz. The nicest quiz master in the world.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. And it's now not too long until the second half of the season. We'll be back at least once more before then, when we get back for the Dutch Grand Prix review. Until then, Abby, Sam, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for hosting.
Yes. Thank you for having us.
As Sam, I'm going to dob you in again on something that came in before the recording. Brilliant. Described Abby the hôtesse with the motesse after I taught him the French word for host. So,
avec,
whether
please,
or not I have been that. Yes, I did say about avec. Actually.
You did.
Okay, well, it's been a pleasure. I hope you guys have all enjoyed listening to it too. As ever, check out the formulanerds.com website. That's a weird way to say that. As ever, check out formulanerds.com for all your news and whatever else you could want. We'll be back with our news and or views very soon. Until then, I guess it is. I don't know. It's the new show. Do I do my normal sign-off line? I don't know the rules. I'm doing it. It's lights off, mics off. Lights off, mics off. That's the Cut to the Race one.
James, you wouldn't believe how many times I had to do that when I was trying to host. I could not get it right.
Lights off, mics off, and off we go. Off. Goodbye.
You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out and away we go.
Sports Social Podcast Network.